The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
You are listening to the newly rebranded Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I'm your host, Matthew Holmes. You can find me on X at MLB at Matt. And I'm joined tonight with Terry Cushman Jr. at Cushman MLB and Juan the Vibes Guy Liriano, Juan at Juan on MLB. Well, finally a fun game to watch, boys. What were your thoughts on the game tonight? We'll start with you, Terry.
World Series back on. I'm kidding. You know, how's that line go? A sun shines on a dog's ass. I don't know. I forget how it goes. But, you know, you finally ran into one. Texas, you know, started Jack Leiter and just didn't have it. And for once, the Red Sox didn't suck more than the sucky pitcher they were facing. So that's the opening take.
Yeah, I'm going to give them credit. The Texas Rangers have been hot. They've won 9 out of their last 12 games. So I'm not going to crush them. It's a great win. I think as we were talking before the show, this is the most runs they've scored at home, I think, with 10 runs. So, I mean, as Terry said, World Series back on. Let's do it. Let's be buyers. The trade deadline, and let's get this show on the road. But nah, feeling good on a Friday night after a Boston Red Sox win.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I'm certainly not fully bought into the Breslow experiment and the roster as it stands. But with that being said, it was a fun game. Finally, a fun game to watch. They put up a week's worth of runs. Certainly great to see them at home doing their thing. And yeah, Juan, great point. 9 out of 12 coming in. The Rangers had won. When I heard that, I said, okay, oh boy, it's going to be a long night, a long weekend for us. And then Greg gets in a little bit of trouble and he gets out of it and then really cruised the rest of the game. So I know we wanted to talk and dissect a little bit about his performance tonight. Juan, what were your thoughts on Sonny Gray and how he came out pitching tonight?
I mean, Sonny Gray has been dealing this entire season. I wasn't a fan of the Red Sox trading for him because I felt like, I mean, what are you really getting him for? You have Tolley, you have Early. And then at that time, at least Oviedo was in the mix. Brian Bayo was in the mix. Garrett Crochet was here. Ranger Suarez was here. So I didn't really see how Sonny Gray fit in with this team. But to be completely honest, he's been their best pitcher. Right now, he's 9-1 with an ERA just over 3. He's won 5 out of his last 6 starts. Today, he was dealing. After that first inning, as you mentioned, he had faced the first 4 batters. I think he had given up 3 hits. In the following 19 batters, those batters went 2 for 19, 1 single and 1 double with 6 strikeouts. I mean, the guy has been our best pitcher. You know, obviously, Garrett Crochet being down, he wasn't himself before the injury. Of course, I know we're going to get into this, you know, what's going to happen with Sonny Gray, because this team isn't going anywhere this season, if we're going to be completely honest. And right now, he is your best asset. He's 9-1. A playoff team could make a push for a guy like that. And, you know, we can really bank in if we trade him, you know, obviously as he is high right now after winning this game. But just got to be proud of the Boston Red Sox coming in and winning this game and Sonny Gray dealing again.
Yeah, I mean, the first inning, you know, scuffled a little bit. Rangers got on the board 1-0. And, you know, like I said, Jack Leiter was scuffling a little bit. So, you know, kind of started to take the pressure off Sonny Gray. The Red Sox got 2 runs pretty fast. But after that first inning in which Gray gave up 2 hits, innings 2, 3, 4, and 5, 4 consecutive innings, 3 up, 3 down. That's dominant. And then in the 6th, you know, they strung together a couple more hits, but It really was a pretty, I don't know if you want to call it a dominant outing. I think you can call it a dominant outing. And, you know, we take turns, you know, for a while. You know, I think, well, I don't know if Garrett Crochet was ever our best pitcher, because that Twins game got him pretty good. And I think the game after that, he scuffled. And then April 25th, he's been out. You know, Juan, you can give your line from yesterday when it comes back around to you. Crochet versus Skubal, which was epic. But yeah, I don't know. I think Sonny Gray at this point is the undisputed ace of the Red Sox pitching staff. I was willing to say it was Connelly early for a while. He had an ERA right around 2. Peyton Tolley, similar, or maybe he's up to 3 now. I forget. But you know, he still looks a little flawed. And Sonny Gray, I took the L officially on all my winner takes on Sonny Gray, on how he was going to be awful and how it was going to be Corey Kluber 2.0. Like, that's how hard I went on Sonny Gray. Not having a really viable fastball, you know, I think it touches 91, 92 on a good night. And man, all the demons from his past at Fenway Park just have not been a thing. He's pitched very well home and away. And I don't know. I mean, what's the long-term future for Sonny Gray? And by long-term, I mean just the next year or two.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I wasn't a huge fan of the move back when he first joined the Sox, especially when it was positioned that he might be our number two. Once we brought in Ranger Suarez, then I thought, okay, he's definitely a more viable 3 or 4 spot in the rotation. But it's definitely proven me wrong. He is the bona fide ace, I think, on the staff right now as well. I'm pretty sure Early led the team in innings and strikeouts, but Gray, since coming back from his injury now, I think he improved to 6-0 since that. So the guy's dealing, he's keeping us in games. And I mentioned earlier, I'm not buying stock in the Red Sox offense. I'm buying stock in Sonny Gray. So I think it's really good to see him pitch well, deal the way he was dealing tonight. Because if nothing else, he's increasing his trade value. So that's a win for us. He's not a long-term guy for the Sox. But if we, you know, wanted to keep him and hold on to him next year, or that control plus his performance this year, should be able to net you a pretty good return. And the way that we have some of our other arms lined up in the rotation, i.e. Early and Tolley, who are young, Crochet locked up, technically Bayo locked up, dare I say his name. So it just kind of makes sense when we're ready to start selling that Gray is one of them. So as long as he continues to pitch well, that's definitely going to benefit the Sox one way or another. Either that he's helping us win games or helping us bring back a chip that's going to help us win games in the future. It was an interesting performance, though, because that first inning was a little scuffled, but he also struck out 3 guys in the first inning, too. So despite getting into trouble, he was able to get himself out of the jam by way of the K, and then, yeah, really got into a groove. And those 2 hits that I think you mentioned, Juan, definitely came in that 6th inning. So just a lights-out performance. We went into that bottom of the first inning, got 2 right back on him, and he really settled in and never relinquished the lead there. So, like I said, just a fun game to watch, fun to watch him pitch. And he really does great with his cutter and sinker action, controlling both sides of the plate, whether it's a righty or a lefty. Did a good job, I thought, tonight keeping the ball down, and that's how you don't get into trouble. So kudos to him for settling in and getting out of that jam by way of the K. And, yeah, it was a fun Friday at Fenway, I guess.
I would have thought the first inning wasn't a good one for Sonny Gray, because I feel like he has had traffic on the bases. He hasn't gotten killed at all in the first inning. But his whip is really just 1.25. I mean, I wouldn't say that's super low, but it's not terrible either. You know, walks and hits per inning. And that's just for the first inning. So yeah, it's interesting, but he just always, even when he scuffles, he just seems to lock it back in and just continues to cruise. He's been phenomenal. I mean, I wonder what his ERA would be without that that bad start in April, and then ultimately went on the injured list. But he's just been this. I mean, he was Cy Young runner up a couple of years ago, so I don't want to say that this could be, you know, his best season or even his second best season, but he's giving you, he's almost an automatic win every time out.
I mean, he'd be in consideration if the Red Sox were a winning team. He's 9-1. If the Red Sox were a winning team right now, he would be talked about as maybe the favorite to win the Cy Young. The problem is, of course, the Red Sox stink this season, which kind of forces them at this point to, you know, kind of sucks that he's playing this way, but you're going to have to trade him. But he's been lights out. I think he's proven all of us wrong, because I'm with you, Matt and Terry. I certainly wasn't a fan. I felt like we had too many pitchers and Sonny Gray was just not going to work out here. But yeah, he's proven us wrong. He's been our best pitcher. He's been our ace. And we'll see what happens moving forward. At least, you know, we have, I think, what, 8 weeks before the trade deadline? The Red Sox are going to have to make a decision here. If he's playing at, he's playing this high, you're going to have to make a decision here, and it's probably going to have to be to trade him off.
Last year, he led Major League Baseball in strikeout to walk ratio at 5.29. And he's only at 2.75 this year, because in his first handful of starts, he wasn't really racking up the strikeouts. You are starting to see it a little more in the last handful of starts. But without looking, unless you already have in the last minute or so, you mentioned he's 9-1 on the season. What do you think the most wins he's ever had in a season is? Just wild guess.
Let me make a guess. Maybe 14.
Yeah, I was going to say 15. He's had some low teens, but nothing higher than that.
The correct answer is 14, and he's done that for three seasons in his career. So he's had 14 wins three separate times, and that's the most. So, you know, when you look at 9-1 right now, he's basically on pace for possibly 20 wins. Like, I can't even wrap my head around that.
Yeah, and even more than that, you mentioned the one bad start at Minnesota, which I don't know what they put in our water in that hotel room, but Crochet got lit up for his, you know, 10 or 11 runs that game, and then Gray the next day. The Twins just oddly have had our number all season, but he gave up 5 runs that game. Outside of that, he's never given up more than 3 runs in a Red Sox uniform, and he only did that twice. So you're talking 3 starts where he gave up 3 runs or more, which were 3 runs, 3 runs, and 5, and everything else has been 2 or less, which means he's just giving you quality start after quality start. You love to see it. You love to see a guy out there. He just seems like a competitor who goes out there and gives us a chance to win. And it seems like we, even though we can't score for guys like Early or Toley, we find ways to win when he's on the mound. And I'm not sure what it is, his presence or the way he controls kind of the strike zone or what, but yeah, good to see them rally behind him. And the bats were definitely lighting up tonight too as well. So any other thoughts on Gray before we move over to the offense?
Just that when he talks, he sounds redneck as hell. And I just said, it always throws me. Like, I mean, you know, most players, seems like most top athletes in almost any sport are from warmer weather states for some reason. But well, anyway, that's my final thought on him.
Speaking of redneck, did anyone enjoy Papelbon on the broadcast tonight? The socks in the box?
I made that same exact observation. I'm like, if you didn't know who he was or what he looked like, you'd think he'd be sitting there in overalls, you know, just chatting.
He's a country boy for sure.
He is, yeah.
But I thought it was a good combo, good mix between him and Lou and Will, good kind of different generations of Red Sox, different types of personalities. So, and all with different perspectives from playing the game. But yeah, with that being said, the bats really woke up tonight. Like I said before, a week's worth of runs, they scored 10 on them. A couple of those were late in the game, but they got to Leiter for 6. So 12 hits, you love to see it. We did a little bit of everything, starting with small ball in the beginning. Sadon kind of gets on by fielder's choice. You know, Gasper in the leadoff spot. Maybe that's the secret sauce. Juan, what were your thoughts on the offense tonight?
Honestly, the 3-4-5 guys, they were, I mean, on fire today. You know, they all hit a home run. So Rafaela, Abreu, and Contreras, they all hit a home run. They all had over two RBIs. It's good to see when they're attacking this way. I wasn't too sure about the Mickey Gasper being the leadoff. I just felt like, hey, we're losing right now. Nothing's working. Let's try something. And I felt like that's what they were doing here. You know, certainly it's not like Mickey Gasper lit it up today. I think having, you're going to hear the train right now on my end, but having Rafaela and Abreu and Contreras play the way that they did, it certainly does help this team move forward. They are what sparks this team. As long as they continue to play this way, the Red Sox have a chance to put up numbers. I'm not going to say wins. They have a chance to put up numbers and be a respectable offense, at least compared to what they've been so far this season. What do you think, Terry?
You know, I want to drink the Rafaela punch. I like Rafaela. I've been a fan. He's a chill guy. He doesn't make it about himself, as flashy as he is out there. I'm a huge fan, and it's been a torturous journey with him. You know, just the glove has kept him in the big leagues. I mean, there was in the second half last season, he was not hitting at the big league level at the plate, but the glove kind of saved him. And you look at those minor league numbers, and he was a 300 hitter throughout the minors. And the knock on him, even before he made his debut, was that he has issues with pitch recognition, and he did. And, you know, he's always hit in the bottom third of the lineup. And lately, kind of out of necessity, he's been hitting from the two hole. And he hasn't skipped a beat since hitting up there. And I have said numerous times over the last couple of years, in a perfect world, Duran would be the leadoff guy and Rafaela would be your two hitter. And that's as close as you would get to Pedroia and Ellsbury, or vice versa, rather. You know, Ellsbury leading off, Pedroia hitting second. And then you've got your power guys coming in the 3, 4, and 5 holes. I love that setup. You know, analytics has gotten so nuts that, you know, your best hitter is going to hit second. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but man, we've seen what works. And, you know, two elite contact guys, elite on base guys in your first two slots is, you know, I think that's a recipe for winning. And, you know, Rafaela, I wouldn't say he's an elite contact guy or an elite on base guy. At least he hasn't been. Until this season. But man, I just so badly want the 2026 Rafaela to be the Rafaela of the next 6 or 7 years.
So in that scenario, is Gasper Ellsbury tonight in that scenario?
Jesus. now, Matt.
That's annoying.
It annoys me that we won after that. Like, you don't deserve to win if Gasper's your leadoff guy. What do you... I don't know if he'll be on a big league club a year from now. It's been a cute, adorable story, as Charlie would say. And, you know, the numbers are ticking down a little bit. He had a hit and a walk tonight, so good for him. I think, wasn't that first? I didn't see the first inning.
Yeah, he had a four-pitch walk in the first inning. Okay. And oddly enough, last night I thought tonight was the only winnable game in the series. With DeGrom and Evaldi coming up next. We'll get into that later in the show. But I kind of thought that our chance of winning was lighter, not being accurate with his pitches. You know, if he gets a little wild and we can get some traffic on the bases, maybe we can do some damage. And sure enough, right out of the gate, Gasper, 4-pitch walk. We obviously did get some balls over the fence. We got some balls off the wall, too. A lot of extra base hits tonight. But yeah, it's really encouraging to see Sadon take that step forward. We already know what he could do on the defensive side of the ball, especially in center field. He really impacts the game almost like no other defender in the game right now, and defensively. And offensively, that was his Achilles heel, right? Pitch selection And even just knowing when to swing, and sometimes he comes out and wants to swing at the first pitch no matter where it is, and then he wants to be patient even when the pitch is right down the middle, you know? So it's pitch timing, it's pitch selection, but he's clearly an athlete. He's an athletic guy, and he had 3 hits tonight, another home run, 3 RBI. His average is now up to 287 with an OPS over 800 at 801. I mean, that's a ball player. That's an all-star, especially when you mix in that defense. I love it. There's something about these green uniforms where he just turns into Mookie Betts when he puts on this green uniform, and I'll take it all day. I joke about the uniforms, but if he's going to play like that, let's wear those green ones every day. He was putting bat to ball there. He came to play tonight. He had the RBI in the 5th and then obviously the home run in the 7th. But let's not forget that Gasper walk really set up our first run in that inning, because Gasper got on, Sadon grounded to second, but because of his speed, he beats out the double play. Then he steals second, puts the pressure on the defense. The ball goes to the outfield, so now he's on third base. And then he scored on a sac fly that was very shallow. Abreu hit it very shallow to the left, and it was a tough play. And Epperson, our third base coach, has had some questionable sends at third, and it was a close play, but the throw wasn't really there. I think a good throw could have got him, but I was thinking about that play, and then Contreras went yard, but I kind of like the send there, the way the offense has been playing. I don't mind him being aggressive there with Sadon with that type of play. It's a tough play coming in on the ball there, and Sadon does have wheels, so it would have taken a perfect throw to get him. I kind of like the aggressiveness despite some of the bad calls, bad sends by Epperson there, and then in the end it didn't really matter because we started hitting the ball out of the ballpark and off the wall, and then you know, like I said before, Gray didn't relinquish the lead. So a good performance all around.
Yeah. To me, like, you know, obviously, as you mentioned, the defense, he's one of the, if not the best defensive center fielders in Major League Baseball. The offense, of course, is what can get a little streaky. What I love about this season with Rafaela is that he's cut down on the strikeouts by like almost 50%. I mean, one of the biggest critiques of Rafaela's game has always been, as you mentioned, you know, the strikeouts, swinging at pitches outside of the strike zone and trying to force the game. He's cut down on that this season. So I really do love that he's worked on that. He's never going to be that, you know, 30 plus home run hitter. He gets on base. He's great defensively. And to have him either in the 1 or 2 spot in our lineup for a competitive team is something, as Terry mentioned, that I'd love to see this version of Rafaela for the next 6 to 7 seasons. If we can get that, then we're in good position.
It is nice to see him not swinging at junk. Surprisingly, I was just pulling up his stats and he's only drawn 14 walks. Not super great. You know, that's on pace for, you know, probably 30 to 35 if the second half matches the first half. And then when you pull up his Savant chart, he's really not elite in anything, really. His bat speed is well below average, and he still seems to chase a little bit, but his whiff rate is about league average. So he's not chasing so much on strike 3, but I don't know. It's just, you look at his expected batting average. Now he's hitting .287 right now. That is his batting average, but his expected batting average based on the Savant data is only .243. So, you know, hopefully there'll be a continued evolution here. And I don't know what that would be. And I'm curious to know what's the difference between 2025 and, you know, 2026. 2025, I mean, he had a very uninspiring, he hit .249 with a .295 on base. So compare that to .287 with a .344 on base this year.
But he had a really good month, a really good stretch last year that kind of showed flashes or signs of what he's doing this year. And I'm not sure what it is. It's just bat to ball. I don't have the numbers up in front of me, the advanced statistics the expected batting average being lower than his actual is a little odd. I believe that's that doesn't take into account consideration speed, so maybe that's where that's impacting it. But yeah, I mean, when you put the ball in play, good things happen. I think that's what it comes down to. That's a double play if some other guys are running that out. You know, Wong, I know he has some good speed, but if Wong hits that ball in the first inning, that's probably a double play. It's just it's encouraging to see him. I think one of those was a flare single out to right, right? He kind of just stuck the bat out there, his last hit, and got a hit out to right. So it's just good to see him on base. However he can get on base, we'll take it because his speed can definitely impact the game, which I actually just have it pulled up his baseball reference. All the speed I was talking about, he only has six steals. So I'm not sure if tonight was number seven. Sometimes it takes a day for this to refresh. Yeah. But yeah, I'd love to see him getting on base and stealing some more bases. Chad has definitely had the guys running a little bit more than Cora did. But, you know, it's all timely as well. So any other thoughts on the offense? Abreu hit well against the Rangers as he normally does. I think he's a career 400-plus hitter versus them. So.
Something on Abreu. That was his first home run in what
27 days, I think.
That is incredible, man. From our three hole hitter to not have that power. I mean, it kind of explains the Red Sox record and how they've been playing recently. But that was interesting to learn tonight.
Yeah, he was definitely going through a power outage for a little while there, I guess almost a month without a home run. He was still getting hits, but he just wasn't hitting for power. And good to see him hit one off the wall and another one out of the ballpark to dead center. So that's a bomb. I'm not sure if that means he can start getting hot, but it definitely starts with a game like this or a series like this where, for whatever reason, he always hits the Rangers well, especially in that ballpark. I think he has 9 career home runs versus them now after tonight. So. With his career home runs probably flirting around 50. I don't have that in front of me, but that's a good amount of home runs of a team that he doesn't see very often. So if he can start getting hot, I mean, we'll take all the runs we can get at this point. But, yeah, bit of a power outage. Good to see him snap out of it.
I mean, we'll see if this is the real deal. As you mentioned earlier, the next two games against DeGrom and Eovaldi, those are legit pitchers. Right. So we'll see we're not expecting them to put up 10 runs, but at least if they can put bat on ball, get on base, we're going to see if this is the real deal these next 2 days.
Yeah. I mean, two totally different guys. I could see Eovaldi getting slapped around a bit just with his aggressive attack the zone type mentality. You know, I could see the Red Sox blooping some hits. And, you know, you mentioned that flare earlier from Rafaela. I could see a lot of that. I mean, remember that game? It was recently. We hit like 10 or 12 singles. It was nuts, but we put up a ton of runs.
14 yeah. in a row.
It was 14 in a row?
Until Duran hit the home run for the 15th hit. Yeah, 14 okay. singles in a row.
Yeah, I mean, I could see something like that taking place, but... we know Gasper will be the leadoff hitter at this point, but
yeah, he's earned the spot after tonight.
Yeah. Have you guys been seeing any rumors that the Red Sox maybe trade? Well, they want to get Isaac Paredes still.
The time for that was the offseason. What are we doing? Yeah. Like, what are you going to give up for him? And you know, I remember the first show on here. I mentioned that Isak Paredes being the guy that I wanted the Boston Red Sox to go after. You know, the rumors kind of died down. And I mean, I just don't, it's a weird time for them to try to go after Isak Paredes. I don't see it.
I haven't heard any rumors. I always love the idea of Paredes in the Red Sox, on the Red Sox lineup. He doesn't hit really much average, but he's got some pop and a pretty decent on base percentage, plays good third base. So interestingly enough, I think I don't know how many home runs he has, but I think every single one of them is to like left field. So seems to be just a dead pull hitter that would play perfectly in Fenway. So again, I'm not sure why we didn't make that move in the offseason. We obviously thought we found our guy there in Durbin from Milwaukee, but I don't know. With the Astros playing as poorly as they have been, and I don't know if they've turned it around at all. Obviously, we've heard Alvarez trade rumors a little bit across the league. So I don't know, Terry, do you think his price has increased or decreased, Paredes, considering how the Astros are playing this year?
I think more likely than not, it's probably increased. And he's had a good month, or going back 30 days rather. And if you're any executive in Major League Baseball that's on a different team, you're going to fleece the Red Sox. You know they're desperate. They're the most desperate guys in the room. So you're definitely going to try to fleece them and take full advantage. So I can't imagine we'll want to give up the haul that it's going to take. In fact, hang on, I was wrong. So Paredes in the last 30 days last 30 days is hitting 195 with a 308 on base. So I just, Juan's absolutely right. If you were going to do it, you should have done it last winter. You absolutely should have done it last winter. So now you're going to wait until you're 11 games under 500 and then give up a haul probably and then still miss the playoffs.
Especially when the Astros were coming into this year with Carlos Correa and their other shortstop. I can't think of the name off his top of his head right now. So they already had, Jeremy Pena, exactly. They have three infielders for the left side of their infield. So, I mean, it just seemed like a good fit, and I don't know what their asking price was for him. I don't remember them giving up a ton to get him from, was it the Cubs or the Rays? He bounced around a little bit. I think the Cubs had him for 1 year, right? And then they made a trade with the Astros there too, probably for Presley, that reliever.
That's correct.
So
I honestly wasn't a big Paredes guy this winter. I wasn't convinced that he was really going to be the defensive upgrade that we needed, and there were just better options out there. Now, with hindsight, with the benefit of it, you ended up with Caleb Durbin. Paredes sounds amazing, but also he is a dead pole hitter, like you said, and he did have comments over the winter where he was asked about the possibility of being traded to Boston. He goes, I hope not. He goes, I hate hitting at Fenway Park because I just don't really see the ball well there. So not what you want to hear from a guy that your dumbass chief baseball officer wants to trade for.
I don't like to hear that. If he said that, you know what? Screw it. I don't want Paredes. Forget him.
Yeah, if he publicly said he struggles to see the ball at Fenway, then I'm definitely not in on him. But I think your point is pretty interesting, Terry. Other GMs must smell blood in the water when the Red Sox call, right? They know we're in a desperate situation and that we've gotten fleeced in the past, but also that they're so desperate that they might be willing to overpay once again for the guy that they want to, whether it be Craig trying to save his you-know-what and save his job, or just to get the fans and the press off their back, because this year is unlike any other year where, despite poor seasons in the past, especially in recent history where the Sox have finished, third or worst in the division, people are not saying nice things about him on talk radio, even on their own network. So it's not like, the media has kind of had their back like in the past. So, yeah, other GMs must just smell that aroma in the air and the blood in the water and just be like, oh yeah, we're going to take a 20% tax because you guys suck. So they're going to charge us more for the suck tax there.
I've got his Fenway Park numbers up and I was expecting them to be bad based on that comment, but he's a 262 hitter with a 392 on base. This is in 79 plate appearances. And he's got three home runs, so I don't know if that's a good ratio for you know, for 79 plate appearances, but those aren't terrible numbers. And part of me just wonders, like, maybe he's just saying that because he just doesn't want to. Maybe the Red Sox are such a clown show. You know, he's like, oh, I don't want to go, you know, and not that, you know, the Astros are 8 games under 500. If you're wondering, that's, I just checked, they're 31 and 39. And I'm not sure if that includes tonight's game, but yeah, but I mean, the Houston's probably a more fun city for a guy like Paredes. And you know, I didn't have the Astros making the playoffs. I didn't think they'd be this bad. But if I were Isaac Paredes, I would probably take my chances with Houston instead of Boston.
And also, isn't Houston the only left field that's shorter than Fenway too, right? That short dead left center is a little bit shallower, and the wall's definitely lower too. So
yeah,
if you're a dead pull hitter, you're probably better off there than at Fenway. So maybe a little some mind games coming from the 80s.
Caleb Durbin, come on now.
And getting back to the you know, team smelling desperation from Breslow, I don't think other executives really care for Breslow. I don't think they like him. I think I'm just guessing, so this is speculation, but they probably view him as a condescending prick. And, you know, they just don't want to do business with a guy. And Breslow being the low IQ guy he seems to be when it comes to trades and execution of them, probably asks for a lot of dumb shit. And I think those executives literally hang up the phone and they start laughing right away, you know, to guys within earshot saying, yo, this is what Breslow just asked us for. And, you know, so I just couldn't see him, even if he wanted Paredes, even if it made a ton of sense, I don't see Breslow giving up a trade package that, you know, is non-consequential in the long run.
Yeah, he's not. First of all, I don't think he can pull off a trade like that. I mentioned Alvarez, I think last week. To pull off a trade like that, you'd have to go in there thinking that you have to give up whoever to get a guy like Alvarez. And I just don't see Craig Breslow doing something like that. He thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. He's not. And I think that's the biggest problem. Guys don't want to deal with that. Imagine having to go in a room and sit down with someone who thinks that before a word is spewed, that he's the smartest guy and he wants to win no matter what. Like, when you're going into trades where either you're trying to get rid of a contract or you're trying to bring in somebody that you think can help your team win, guess what? You have to go into that room thinking, we're going to have to give up something on both sides. On my end, I'm probably going to have to give up prospects that I don't want to give up to get a guy like, for example, Yordan Alvarez. And on Houston's end, they're probably saying, man, yeah, Yordan Alvarez is great, but, you know, we're going to have to give him up if we want these top prospects that the Red Sox can offer. You know, Breslow's not doing that. And I think other teams are well aware of that. Heck, I think the Red Sox know that. The reason why they're not firing him now is because they already got rid of Alex Cora. They're going to put all the blame on Craig Breslow, and that's what they want to do. If it weren't for that, I don't think Craig Breslow's here. If it weren't for the track record of, you know, they let go of Dombrowski a year after winning a title, they let go of Chaim Bloom, you know, I think it was year 3, right? They're going to wait until the end of the season. They're going to wait until September when it's, you know, I mean, they're going to find out that they're out of it well before that. But they're going to wait until September to probably get rid of him. He's not the guy for this job. He's just not.
I've got more thoughts on that here in a second, but let's just look at Alvarez real quick. Let's say the Tampa Bay Rays acquire him. I think American League pennant favorites at that point. I just think they've already got a great team. I think Alvarez pushes them there. I think that would be amazing. Another interesting team that could desperately use an Alvarez guy, I'd be hesitant to say they're definitely going to the World Series, but Cleveland Guardians, that's a far more dynamic lineup. Putting him and Ramirez back-to-back in the order, whether it's second and third, you know, either way, I don't know how they would stagger that one. Just a massive, massive upgrade there. I wanted to put him on the Detroit Tigers, but they're 12 games under 500. So I'll chill out with that. But yeah, I mean, those are just two teams. I mean, the Yankees obviously could get him. I don't know how much sense that makes. The Orioles, I think their hitting is fine. They need pitching. I wouldn't expect them to give up a haul. The Blue Jays perhaps could be interesting in that regard. But he's going to be the top target, you know, in the month of July. And he could transform a team. And I was just going through American League teams there. I mean, what if the Brewers got him? You know, an offensively starved team in the month of October. Cubs as well. I just think what happens with him, the pursuit of Yordan Alvarez is going to be fascinating. And if I'm the Astros, I'm not trading him before July 31st. Whatever the deadline day is, that's when I'm going to trade him. And I'm going to let these teams bid against each other till I get the most ridiculous package imaginable. And Craig, if you're a Red Sox fan out there hoping it's going to happen, it ain't happening. You're not, and it wouldn't help anyway. It would help, but I don't think it gets you over the line. You're too offensively flawed, and you're still 11 games under, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, Yordan makes any lineup better. He's just that good of a hitter. I could see him fitting on almost any team, including ours. I just don't think Breslow will make any big moves moving forward. Even any trade that we see, whether it is a buying trade or a selling trade, it's not going to be anywhere near a blockbuster because he's just too trigger shy for that. And he doesn't want to swing and miss. He would rather, you know, he does his trades and his negotiations in small ball fashion, just like he designs the club. So he's not going to go swing and misses. He wants to get on base and get singles all day. And, you know, because he's afraid to hit that home run, I don't think he's ever going to hit it in via a trade. Although, you know, a couple of the smaller moves there with the Cardinals have been working out so far. But it's just a tough spot for him to be in. I think you're kind of onto something there, Juan. It is still very close from the slaughtering of the six or seven coaches that we just let go. It's too quick of a turnaround, even though we haven't really played any better. I just think the ownership, the Sam Kennedys of the world, don't want to have egg on their face, as they say, right? So they're better off just kind of holding steady. And then from Breslow's perspective, despite being the smart move to sell, he almost cannot sell because then he's admitting defeat and then he's basically putting himself on the chopping block, right? Saying, well, the plan didn't work, so now I've set us back even farther, right? So from that perspective, if he trades, he might as well just resign at that point if he's selling, right, via trades. And I don't think buying makes much sense for anything either. So from that standpoint, I think he just ends up sitting tight and hopefully ride some waves and maybe they turn around a little bit, but I'm not expecting many changes at all. I mean, you're talking maybe another bullpen arm or a very unattractive, unflashy move coming from him.
I think he's gone after the season regardless. I find it hard to believe that John Henry and Sam Kennedy are willing to allow Craig Breslow to do anything, whether it's to be buyers or sellers. I just can't believe that they actually trust Craig Breslow to do what's right if you're going to go the selling route or if you're trying to buy to help improve this team. They don't trust him. I think he's gone regardless. Come September, I think that's when I'm expecting the news to break. The Red Sox are going to be well out of the playoffs. the playoff run. And I think that's when we get the news that Craig Breslow's gone. And then what happens after that, who knows? My dream would be to have Theo come in here and help reset this team, help build this team yet again from the ground up. That would be my dream scenario. But I'm almost 100% confident that Craig Breslow's gone after this season. They're going to wait until the end of the season, and he's going to be gone.
Well, I still hope there's a path where it happens sooner. You know, like, I don't know if this is the best analogy, but, you know, let's say you're out to a bar and your friend's looking kind of sloppy. You know, are you going to let him drive home, or are you going to take the keys away? You know, you gotta take the keys away from Breslow. And yeah, and I think in Theo's sense, I would love it if he would just take over for the rest of the season. But I think the best role for him, if he's willing to do it, and it would be a very involved role, would be to just take the Sam Kennedy, Larry Lucchino role and just hire the smartest executive you can find that's willing to do it, that's willing to work for you. And I would frame it that way. I'd be like, listen, yeah, John Henry's the owner, but you work for me. You're working under me. We're gonna get this figured out. I think people would want to work for Theo. And I just think that's the best role for him at this point. And, you know, I've made comparisons, like, he's reversed two curses, but they were both different. You know, with the Red Sox, he built a sustainable winner. And, you know, we had some homegrown pitching in Lester and Buchholz. Homegrown players in the lineup, Pedroia, Ellsbury, you know, a handful of others. Mookie Betts was drafted in the Epstein era, for instance. So I think Bogarts was signed as an international free agent at that time. A lot of people don't realize Theo's fingerprints were all over that 2018 team. But then he goes to the Cubs, and he did build a winner, but he didn't build a sustainable winner. There was no real homegrown pitching. I guess Chris Bryant might have been, well, Schwarber would have been homegrown as well. So those were your two homegrown guys, but Zobrist, you know, free agent. Rizzo had bounced around a couple teams before ending up with the Cubs. You know, he was always a valuable trade chip. I'm not knocking him, but they were different. The Cubs were not a sustainable winner like the Red Sox were. And I don't know if the game evolved too much. I don't know why there was a stark difference between the two organizations, but I just think Theo is better as like just the wise man to kind of lean on, you know, to help you navigate. And supposedly Breslow does that a little bit with Theo, but that's the best role, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Bryant was his very first pick, and he came out of the gates winning Rookie of the Year and then an MVP in those first 2 years, right? So, and Adley, was it Wilson Contreras was probably a homegrown guy too. So we're actually seeing some of the benefits of one of his picks over there. But I'm curious to know what your guys' thoughts are. You know, we obviously know the state of the team right now, you know, improving tonight to 11 games below 500. Do we think we're one offseason away from being kind of back to where we were last year, flirting with that outside wild card picture and maybe able to make a playoff push and a deep playoff run? Or are we two seasons away? Because, I don't know, the staff definitely looks good, but I'm looking at some of these free agents heading the market next year. This is pending we do have baseball, right? Let's forget about the strike for a second. I'm not seeing in the top 10 free agent list, I'm seeing nothing but arms, pitchers and left-handed bats. So curious to know what you guys are thinking about the road to recovery here from a Red Sox perspective.
I think there could be a pathway to winning 90 games. Okay. So that probably not good enough to win the division, but I think a smart executive could just tweak some things here. You need to overhaul your hitting program. So that needs to change. You need to have a good manager, good hitting coach, good pitching coach. There needs to be a lot of that going on, and you've got some major league surplus to possibly trade to get that. I wouldn't trade when you say sell everyone. I really wouldn't sell the controllable guys. I'm not trading Rafael. I'm probably not trading Abreu. I might trade Duran. Who else is long term here? I guess I would possibly put Meyer or Anthony in a trade package that makes sense, but I want to keep the core of the team together, because I think with some tweaking, yeah, we could be a much better team.
We've got the pitching, and that's something we set during the offseason. We had a surplus of pitchers, enough to go out there and, you know, pull the trigger on whoever that person, that player is, whether it's Alvarez or a Tatis or a Trout, whoever is available via trade. That's what's going to end up happening in the offseason, unfortunately, because I did look at the bucket of free agents for the 2027 season, and it doesn't look good compared to what you could have done this offseason, whether that be a Kyle Schwarber, Pete Alonso, Alex Bregman. I think you had more options this offseason. So you're going to have to go the trading route if you want to improve the team offensively. Pitching wise, of course, you know, Sonny Gray is probably going to be gone. The improvements of Peyton Tolley and Connolly Early, right, taking that next step along with a Crochet and a Suarez. So you have pitchers, right, unless you want to go out there and sign someone. But I think this offseason, what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to be willing to be ballsy and be willing to trade some prospects to get some offense, because that's the only way I think you're going to get guys to come to this team. Just again, looking at the free agency for this upcoming season, it just doesn't look good enough on the offensive side.
Yeah, it just feels like we've taken two steps back. You know, we took one step forward last year and then maybe three steps back if you're starting with the Devers trade, which I was four at the time, but seeing it all unravel where we're coming into the start of last year with Crochet, Bregman, and Devers, and then we're coming out of this past offseason with just Crochet, who then went down, and I don't know, it feels like we're a ways away from playing winning baseball unless some of these guys can turn it around. I mean, I think Meyer can be your shortstop of the future if you built an offensive team around him. We definitely have to fix the surplus of outfielders, and I just don't know where you're going to find the right-handed pop. It feels like there's no good right-handed hitters out there. I don't know why they're so hard to find these days, but any other thoughts on the state of the team here?
Yeah, two things. So this is why it's so critical to fire Breslow now. And if there's an executive available that's willing to come in and start cleaning house of all the programs I mentioned earlier, pitching, hitting, all that, you could use this second half of the season to fix Marcelo Meyer, help Roman Anthony. Anthony wasn't great up until the injury, but he wasn't terrible. I mean, he wasn't an automatic out or anything, but you can fix these guys. Maybe you can fix Christian Campbell. I would call up Christian Campbell just for the hell of it, if we're out of it, if we're selling, if we know Contreras, Duran, whoever else we have that's movable, Chapman as well, Sonny Gray, if all these guys are moving on, use the second half for development to see what you might have for 2027. That's number one. Number two, go back to 2012. That season's been getting brought up quite a bit recently, because that was the 69 win season, the worst season of this century. That's more than a quarter of the way through. Basically, that, like I said, that was the worst season, and we're trending worse than that right now. in late 2012, you had the salary dump of the century. Literally, you moved Beckett's money. You moved Carl Crawford's money. You moved Adrian Gonzalez's money. I don't think you'll ever see a salary dump like that again. But you moved on from all of that. You won 69 games. And then you made three very shrewd moves to add to your lineup. Mike Napoli, Shane Victorino, and Johnny Gomes. And then what happened? What happened the very next season? So I'll never say never. I don't think there's any scenario where I would pick the Red Sox to win the World Series next year. But like I said just a minute ago, I think there is a pathway to 90 wins if you have a competent executive in there to kind of overhaul the infrastructure of this organization and, you know, just make some tweaks to the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I don't – it's funny that you bring that up. Certainly that was a rapid turnaround from 2011, from 2012 to 2013, and even coming off that 2011 season, the chicken and beer, which was a historic collapse in that September, right? So a really bad 13 months of baseball there from late 2011 to 2012. I don't know if this is the similar scenario, though. Obviously, we will never see a trade replicated of that nature again, Terry. That was – a once-in-a-lifetime salary dump. I believe the Dodgers knew they were sitting on those TV contracts for the local TV revenues that were just about to renew. And so it really didn't matter the price tag there because they just, you know, turned their franchise from a $1 billion net worth value to $7 billion or something. So they had no problem taking on that money back then. And that was, oddly enough, the start of the Dodgers' historic run. They, I don't think, have been below 500 since that trade or since that year. But also, in 2012 and heading into 2013, they definitely made some great signings. They hit lightning in a bottle with almost every one of those signings, and none of them were major break the bank. You know, wow, these are flashy signings, but they all came in, did their job, gelled like a team. But you also had a solid core of young all-stars and former World Series champions, right? We still had Ortiz there, who at that time was a two-time world champion. Pedroia, Rookie of the Year and MVP and World Series champion. Jacoby Ellsbury in his prime coming off that 30-30 season in 2011. You know, we don't have that type of core right now of proven MLB players. And that's why, I mean, to your point, we should just let them play it out and see what you've got. We've seen Sadon take some steps forward here, but I don't know. I don't know if I see a lot of parallels here to from us to that 2012 team other than the amount of games that we're winning.
You don't have your big poppy. So that's out. I mean, your infield, you don't have much of an infield.
Or Pedroia.
But that's what you have to target, really. You know, you have to beef up that infield. You have your outfield. You have some semblance of an outfield. If Rafael and Abreu are in it, you're just, and presumably Anthony is your third piece. You have to beef up that infield and your DH spot it was like 14 out of 16 seasons. You had either David Ortiz or JD Martinez as your DH. That formula worked pretty well.
So trading for Yordan is the first pillar of that championship coliseum that we're about to build, right, Terry? That's the bat we need.
It's the bat we need, but, you know, we'll go from like the, I don't know where we're at, the number 8th ranked farm system down to the 22nd farm ranked farm after that trade. I don't know. I don't know that gets it done. But what do we got for tomorrow?
Yeah, so tomorrow's matchup is Ranger Suarez versus Jacob DeGrom. Ironically, both coming into tomorrow with 3.18 identical ERAs there. DeGrom 5-4 and Ranger 2-3. Who do you guys like tomorrow? We'll start with you, Juan.
That's a tough one. I mean, you look at DeGrom's numbers the last two outings, 11 innings pitched, 7 hits, 0 runs, 3 walks, and 14 strikeouts against this Boston Red Sox lineup. That is a recipe for disaster. Now, Ranger Suarez, you know, he's been dealing against the Yankees. He went 6 innings, only allowed 1 run. They ended up losing that game thanks to our bullpen, of course. But, you know, he has been dealing. He has been one of our best pitchers. The question is, can this Red Sox offense get to DeGrom? He's been dealing the last two outings. I don't know. I'm going to keep the streak going. I pick against them. They win. So I'm going to pick against the Red Sox. I think the Rangers win out tomorrow and Sunday. Hoping that kind of reverses the curse here.
I will not pick the Red Sox to win this. I mean, this is the exact opposite. I don't know. I'm not going to pull his numbers up and try to assess if he's a first ballot Hall of Famer or not, but he's one of the greatest pitchers of the last decade. And I think it's going to be a grown man striking out a bunch of little boys. And I just don't see them overcoming Jake DeGrom, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I said it last night that tonight was the only winnable game in the series. You know, DeGrom is just going to be, I don't have his numbers up either other than the ERA for the matchup tomorrow, but I see him being overpowering. I mean, it was great to see them put up 10 runs tonight, but let's not forget it was just 2 games ago that Drew Rasmussen mowed us down for 7 innings of you know what. So DeGrom, I see him being a similar type of pitcher and us struggling in a similar fashion. Most likely going to be a low-scoring game because Ranger Suarez has been pitching well, but unfortunately when he pitches, we never score. So all of his efforts is gone for nothing. But yeah, I got the Rangers tomorrow, and maybe they'll prove me wrong, but until then, we're going Rangers. Any other closing thoughts, guys?
I feel like after a high-scoring game, we drop an egg the next. How that 17-1 game, pretty sure we lost the next day. And yeah, I don't know, we'll see.
That's why I said we scored our week's worth of runs tonight. The offense can take the next couple of days off, and we'll even out to our average 2.9 runs per game or whatever it is. But with that being said, we'll let everyone